All righty, hour number two of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network, putting a bow on conference championship weekend, where we did see the Eagles take care of business up against the Commanders. And this man was on the sidelines with the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs, and he is Evan Washburn from CBS Sports, kind enough to join us right now. Evan, appreciate the time as always. How you been, my man?
I'm good. Yeah, good to be back with you.
Well, I appreciate you joining us. So let me start you off with your interview with McDermott after the game. Those are always awkward, right, when a coach loses. He's down in the dumps and then right away has to talk to the media, but it's part of the job. Just what did you kind of take away from the conversation with Sean McDermott after another gut-wrenching and heartbreaking loss for the Buffalo Bills up against the Chiefs?
Yeah, you're right. Those are not easy. I've had to do a bunch of them, whether it's been AFC Championship games, Super Bowls, college basketball, March Madness. And I think what you have to do in that spot is really match the energy of whoever you're talking to. And it helps to have a relationship professionally with the person you're talking to. And having that with Sean, knowing that he was going to handle it professionally, but also knowing that we had to present it in a way where it was a true interview and not just a chance for him to say exactly what he wanted in that moment. And that's what you try and do. It's a fine line to walk. I think I took from it what I expected to take or was hoping to take from an unfortunate situation for the Buffalo Bills, which is an acknowledgement of just what a season they had, what they were able to do, but also how just gut-wrenching it was to lose that game. And how much who they're playing and who's under center in Patrick Mahomes affects every angle of your approach and your decisions. And you have to live with those decisions now for the next, whatever it ends up being, 6 months.
Yeah, it's fascinating when you put it into that perspective, because if we would have talked about the Bills before the season and didn't say who they lost to, just said they made it to the AFC Championship game, I think a lot of people would have signed up for that year one removed from Stephon Diggs. But when you play that well and you get to that moment, right, you don't know how many more chances you'll get of that, even though you have a Super Bowl window still open with Josh Allen. And when it happens to Kansas City again, yes, the Bills overachieved this year, but you walk away with just saying, man, are they ever going to be able to beat these guys when it matters?
And you don't know how many opportunities you're going to get. As good as Josh Allen is, as impressive as this season was in showing themselves first, but really all of us, that they don't need A-listers around him necessarily from a Pro Bowl or All-Pro standpoint. And then defensively, similarly speaking, to make this run, they truly were a sum of their parts with a superhero at quarterback. But there's no guarantee, because Baltimore's going to continue to be in the mix. Cincinnati, you would think, would be able to figure out a way to have a fast start next season and be back in the playoffs. So the AFC is just loaded right now. The Chargers, obviously. Are the Houston Texans going to come back? So for Buffalo, and this is where these guys recognize things that maybe we don't say enough, there's no guarantee Josh Allen ever gets back to that game in his career, and we expect him to play another 10 years, I would imagine. So that's a reality that they have to sit with now. And I think that's what's – and the game was there to be had. And there was the – whether it was the early fourth and ones or fourth and inches or fourth and goals or the two-point conversions or obviously the fourth and five, which gets so much attention now, there's opportunities there, or defensively opportunities to make a play even down the stretch there in that play to P. Ryan that ended up sealing the game. So those are the things, again, they have to replay in their mind. And when we hear – how do you win this game? It comes down to execution in the biggest moments, because they played well enough to win.
I'm glad you brought up the P. Ryan play at the end of the game. Now, if they stop them, a field goal gets it to a six-point game. If they miss it, they're in good field position. It's a three-point game as well. But it felt like when I was watching the game, when they didn't get the fourth and five, everyone just assumed that the game was over. Was the Bills sideline like just totally deflated after the fourth and five? Did it feel like the game was over, or was it just to a different level when P. Ryan ended up being wide open and getting that first down?
Yeah, it's tricky, Zach. And you're right. That is part of the job, is to try and gauge the emotional swings and momentum that you can feel that can be palpable at times. There was nothing remarkable either way. Yes, there was some real disappointment and dejection offensively that they couldn't complete that pass to Kincaid, or they failed to convert on fourth and five. And that was the energy coming off the sideline. But it was clear that defensively they were still in the mindset that we just have to get them off the field and get another opportunity to Josh in the offense. That wasn't said necessarily. It wasn't as if Josh was running on the sideline saying, all right, just get the ball back and we're going to go down and score. Nothing like a sports movie in that regard. I do think that there was some frustration that they couldn't continue. That felt like the drive, and then it was a reminder to all of us that, hey, if they stop them, they've got ample opportunity to, as you pointed out, either win the game or tie it.
Evan Washburn here with us. So going into this game, the officials were a big talking point. I know Kansas City's fed up with that. Mahomes has talked about it. I had Drew Tranquil on last week, and he was just laughing at the notion that the Chiefs just get all the calls. Covering both sides of this, right, Beaton, in some of those production meetings, again, the access that you had, how big was the officials and the talking points of that leading into this one?
Well, yeah, Zach, I'll be honest. I don't think we really touched on it at all with the teams. It's just not something – there's no furthering of the story from our side of things or from the athlete side of things or the coaches that we can project to fans. I know that's frustrating, but the reality is the officials are their own entity, and they're going to do everything they think is right to officiate a clean game. And there's going to be things, as is human nature, that upon review, whether it's immediately in the game when there are reviews or in the days after, that are going to bring to light maybe mistakes and all those things. But it really is, it's a fool's errand on our part to try and go into a game and say, all right, everybody, we're going to really keep a close eye on how they're officiating the Chiefs and look for opportunities to further what is in a lot of ways a conspiracy theory. Now, all that said, we have Gene Steratore in the booth, and he does his, in my opinion, the best job in the NFL at trying to give fans an idea of what the decision is, should be in his opinion, and why it maybe was or wasn't.
You know, I think you guys are in a tough spot. Like, obviously, this is your job. This is what you do. But it's easy for us to second guess and third guess calls when I'm sitting on my couch, right? And it's a comfy, controlled environment. You're on the sideline, you know, watching it how you watch it. But your reaction in the moment on the two scenarios, one, the fourth and one that wasn't converted by Josh Allen. You know, at first, I didn't think he got it when I saw the overplay angle. I thought that the overhead view, I thought he did. And then also the Xavier Worthy catch. I thought that was going to get overturned when the ball, I thought, hit the ground. So how about your view now looking back on both those?
Well, it's funny, too. You mentioned your comfy confines. You all have a better view of all of this than I especially.
Yeah.
We have maybe one monitor with us at times. It's an RF, so it's a mobile monitor, so I can watch the broadcast as it's happening to reference things if necessary. But I'm not living the, you know, the couch experience or the booth experience for that matter of like all the angles and really into the minutia of it. I was near the Worthy play with Cole Bishop. That one felt in the moment just like, oh, unbelievable. Like first the play by Cole and then Worthy to rip it away. It felt like a tie goes to the runner type thing in the moment. And then at the fourth and one, I had, you know, I was just listening to them talk about it. And I'm pretty sure that it was one where we thought it was going to be a first down and then it wasn't, but, or maybe that was the overturned play. The reality is, Zach, there's so much happening that I focus on what is it that they're going to need my perspective on. And I will say that's not one of those things, unless I can get on the talk back and say, hey, I literally saw the ball bounce, which I didn't, or I saw something. There's no real need for me to contribute to the officiating questions. That's, again, what Gene's there for.
And it moves so quickly. And I think the fourth and one has probably been maybe the biggest talking point from that game. Like when
you're talking because now we have the ability to look at a down line and see where his body was. And you can't really see the ball, correct?
Yeah, you can't see it conclusive, which is why they probably kept it. But how many times do they change that when it's not conclusive? I'm just wondering, like when you're walking off the field, like in that moment, what did you think the biggest storyline was from that game?
The fourth and five.
Gotcha.
That Spags sent a corner blitz on fourth and five, and Josh was flushed and couldn't make a accurate and like composed throw, but then as you saw it happen, realize, oh my gosh, he actually made a throw that could have, and in a lot of ways it appears should have been caught by Dalton Kincaid, not to put that on his shoulders and by any means, but that to me was the play that was fresh in my mind. It goes to a previous point or discussion we had here that the reality was, is equally as big a play as Samaje Perine coming out of the backfield and sealing the game. But no, it was the fourth and five. And really, it was the short yardage situations throughout the game. We've spent really the last two seasons, but even in lead up to this one in our meetings, talking about, hey, man, the Bills are kind of playing like first and 8.5 yard football, similar to Philadelphia, because of their ability to utilize the Josh Allen version of the tush push. And the Kansas City was the first team I've seen all season doing all these games, going back to whenever this thing was sort of instituted, the first team that the defense had the edge in that department. So I guess those would be the two things as I was, you know, racking my brain and then also getting prepared to talk to Sean, thinking, yeah, it was those short yardage plays and that fourth and five that's sitting with me right now.
Isn't it amazing with Kansas City, right? You saw Brady and Belichick dominate the NFL for 20 years. A lot of NFL fans were like, finally, now there could be an open window. And how quickly this has just been snatched up by the Chiefs. It's really surreal, Evan.
It really is. And I'm thankful that I got to get a taste of the back half of the Patriots run and now to be alongside for the full KC one. And that was what was cool. And this is, and I'm sure you've heard this from folks you've had on, seeing and being around Josh and Patrick from their rookie years to now in these settings as they've grown and grown as their celebrity, and especially Patrick, but they haven't changed at all. And for them to have the perspective, especially Patrick, in reference to New England, when we asked him about Chiefs fatigue, and he made the point, yeah, I have more respect for what New England and what Tom did, because it's not, at the end of the day, it's what they're doing on the field, but it's exhausting to be where they are year in and year out. And he's only, 8 years in, 7 years as a starter, and they've completely captured that same level of dominance that we saw from New England, if not more, because they've got a chance to three-peat right now, and that little stretch wasn't something we got from New England.
How big, this could be a bizarre question to you, but how big do you think the Taylor Swift storyline is going into this Super Bowl? Because last year it was like nonstop Taylor Swift, Taylor Swift. Obviously she's at the game still. It's her now longtime boyfriend and Travis Kelce, and they show her all the time. But how big is the Taylor Swift story this go around, you think, from a coverage standpoint?
I don't know, Zach. I'm probably the wrong guy to ask, because I've just never found it that captivating, because I appreciate her as a performer, and I think her music's, some of the songs are definitely songs that I've, you know, become aware of. But to me, it's just cool that he's found somebody that he's happy with. And yes, if it brings in more viewers or more fans, absolutely. Look, the reality is everything Super Bowl week, whether it's a story that's been beaten to death or played out, is brought back and it is lifted up. I mean, I was thinking, this is the first year in a long time where I'm not going to even be there during the week. And even the years where CBS doesn't have it, we used to go out and do some coverage for like the daily shows, which, you know, over there at CBS. And you would kind of be put together all your storylines. And often you would go, well, we've told that one 10 times, whatever. But the reality is it's Super Bowl week. Everything's on the table. Everything's getting pushed. And the more broad it is, probably the better, because that's what this week is. This game is. It's the broadest audience. It's the biggest event. So for us football geeks, this is probably not the one to look for the most dynamic coverage.
First thought on the Super Bowl, Eagles Chiefs is what for Evan Washburn?
It's so funny. I was just picking my son up at school, and one of the teachers was like, God, Eagles are so much better. And I'm like, yeah, they might be. They might be more talented. Good luck betting against the Chiefs, though. I'm out on – I mean, not, we don't get to make picks, or we don't. I guess I can make a Super Bowl pick now that I'm not doing the game, but I'm riding KC. There's something there. I think Philly's a more talented, a deeper roster. But, man, every time you try and come up with a reason why the Chiefs aren't going to win, they end up making you look bad because they find a way to win. And I do think the three-peat thing is real, and now they get to talk about it. And that's what's interesting to me. We've had Kansas City, our crew had them a couple times, and it wouldn't have come up in a week 11 or whatever week, you know, 14 ish times that we had them. But then as you got into the playoffs, you started to hear it more. And then it was a discussion point this week and lead up to the Bills game. They were still kind of kicking it to the side because they hadn't gotten to that point yet, but now they're there. And I know that that's real. I know that that's something that they want badly. And I think it would cement so many of them, and Patrick still got so much more time to add to this legacy, but doing something that's never been done in the league is something I think they're all absolutely jacked on the idea of.
Last thing I'll ask you, just get into the hiring cycle. Forget about Vrabel and Ben Johnson, because we just talked about them since those were the first two guys off the board. But with Aaron Glenn to the Jets, Pete Carroll to the Raiders, you had Liam Cohen go to the Jaguars, and then Brian Schottenheimer become the head coach in Dallas. Out of those four, is there one that stands out to you compared to the rest?
Well, the Schottenheimer one was I was surprised. I don't have a strong connection, really any connection to the Cowboys. I've probably done two games of theirs and whatever, 11 seasons at CBS. So I don't know the inner workings. I consume most of it just the way I guess most fans do. I was aware that he was still coaching, but I didn't know that he was in the mix in that regard. So that one was probably the most stunning. And then I would follow that up with Pete Carroll to Las Vegas. And that, as I'm sure you've described or discussed with your listeners, but also people you've had on the show, really feels like a Tom and that organization saying, all right, let's get somebody in here and set a culture and try and at least lay a foundation. Now, the key to me in that's a great point. That's a great idea, but foundations can't be set. And then if the guy moves on or you move on from them, it's got to have some connection to that foundation in a lot of ways. Like a culture is only as good as who carries it on. Those were the two that I would probably say felt outside of kind of what we see normally in these cycles.
Yeah. And you wonder, is Russell Wilson and Pete going to get back together with the Raiders?
That one's interesting. Yeah. I'm fascinated by from what the quarterback coach thing does for in the Sam Darnold to Russell, like where the kind of the chess pieces move, or the dominoes, or however you want to describe it. Because yeah, there's in what feels like a draft that's not quarterback rich, and for some of these teams that are looking to provide some stability there. But man, running Pete and Russ back in Vegas, it would be interesting.
He's Evan
in that division too.
Yes, for sure. And you can feel like get a little stopgap quarterback in there. I don't think it'd be the worst thing in the world. Evan Washburn, NFL on CBS. Great job at the AFC Championship game. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Zach. See ya.
There you go. Evan Washburn joining us on the show. We'll take a break. Let's continue that Raiders conversation when we come on back. We know Pete Carroll has landed with the silver and black. John Spytek is their GM. Who's going to be the quarterback next year? Could it be Kirk Cousins? Could it be Sam Darnold? Or could we get a little Russ and Pete reunion? We get to that on the other side. Alrighty, rocking and rolling. Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network. We'll talk about the possibility of Russell Wilson going back to the Raiders or going to the Raiders to reunite with Pete Carroll in just a second. 855-212-4227. Brian in Dallas is on the line, and he wants to talk about Brian Schottenheimer winding up with the Dallas Cowboys. Is this Brian Schottenheimer, or is it just another Brian in Dallas?
No, this is actually Francois in Dallas.
Ah, Francois, how are you? Good to hear from you. I haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, it's been a minute, and I appreciate you always taking my call. I've got two comments I want to make if you have time. There's been a lot of talk and articles written about the fact that, you know, Schottenheimer's never been a head coach. But in researching, Ben Johnson's never been a head coach either. So there's no guarantee he's going to be successful in Chicago. Robert Saleh was the, and I hopefully I didn't butcher his last name.
Saleh, but don't worry, Francois, because we'll probably mess up your, we messed up your name, so you could call him Saleh. That's good for me.
All right. Well, he was defensive
coordinator. Be like if Pele was an actual football coach.
Yeah. But yeah, he was obviously in San Francisco, he was a successful defensive coordinator. But as the head coach, got fired by the New York Jets. So, I mean, you know, I'm not saying all the things about Jira are not probably true. I'm just saying.
So here's the only difference, I think. When Ben Johnson was hired, that's when he was a hot offensive coordinator. When Robert Saleh was hired, that's when he was a hot defensive coordinator. Brian Schottenheimer, like, when he was with the Jets, there was talk maybe one day that he could be a head coach, but that's going back to, well, like 2008, 2009, somewhere in that realm, because he was with the Jets for a while. So I don't think anyone else would have hired Schottenheimer as a head coach. Now, you know this, Francois, there's a lot of times we've ripped hires before and they turn out to be good hires, but I just don't see why you would do this one unless if it's just because this fits the mold of Jerry Jones being able to control a head coach.
Yeah, and people say that. Brian Schottenheimer is 51 years old, and I'm not sure that he would let or allow anybody to quote-unquote control him. But I think he's got, based on what I'm hearing from sources I have that have connections at the Star, he's got a great vision. I've been told he hadn't been to sleep since he got the head coaching job. And sometimes a guy like that can work out. Now, will he work out? We don't know. I mean, we don't have a crystal ball. But what I can say is I think he's going to do everything in his power to get the Cowboys back to relevancy. Now, would that happen? We don't know. But, I mean, They talked about Lincoln Riley. He didn't get an interview with Lincoln. Sarkisian stayed at Texas. I mean, you got Aaron Glenn that's now at the Jets. I mean, it's a crapshoot all the way around. So you can be critical of every hire. The proof is in the pudding.
Now, Francois, I'm really intrigued by something. You said you have sources connected with the Star. Are you now our Cowboy insider? Like, what's the background there with knowing people in the Cowboys organization?
No, well, just I was in sports talk radio for 18 years.
Oh, really?
Preston Pearson, I was his radio partner for several years. We did locally here in Dallas. Never could get drive time or morning drive. But I know a lot of former NFL players, a lot of Cowboy players, and I have a certain person that actually trains a lot of the Dallas Cowboy defensive linemen, and he talks to Will McClay all the time. So obviously I can't reveal those sources, but I get little tips, new tidbits here and there. But, I mean,
you sound a little bit like Drew Pearson, by the way.
I'm sorry?
You sound a little bit like Drew Pearson, by the way.
Well, it's funny because Drew Pearson's brother-in-law, or excuse me, his son-in-law, was our producer
for
about a year.
Really?
He actually was. Yeah.
I apologize that I called you Brian in Dallas, and since you're a radio guy, you know this. I'm throwing my producer under the bus then because that's what they put up on the screen.
No, don't do that, because without your producer, boy, you'd fail miserably.
Yeah, you're probably right on that. But hey, I didn't know that you had a big radio background, and I appreciate you calling and always enjoy when you get to catch up with us. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for taking my call.
You got it. So there you go. Brian in Dallas, who's not Brian in Dallas, he's Francois. I mentioned Francois, I think, the other day. You know, I haven't heard from him in a while. But I know that he's a big Cowboy fan. I've talked to him at the Cowboys for years. I didn't realize he did radio for 18 years. He never brought that up. And sometimes when you say a caller, like sources, they sometimes are making fun of people that actually have sources. But Francois is definitely, I would say he is in the lead spot right now for the Zach Gelb Show, Drama Dallas, Choking Cowboy Insider. Francois could be our new Dallas Cowboy Insider. Anytime he wants to call, he could do that. Anyway, let's get to Russ to the Raiders. So Benbozo in the YouTube chat, or Bendozo, whatever his name is, he asks, why would Russ and Pete reunite? Like, didn't Pete want Russ out? Kind of. So if you go back to that, and I actually had a source connected close to the situation back when this was a thing a few years ago, and I've talked about that on the air. But when you look back at that whole Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson situation, the initial fight was that Pete thought, because Russ was throwing a lot of touchdowns, but there was more turnovers in that season, that we wanted that the Seahawks needed to scale it back a little bit, where they didn't want him to throw as much. And they wanted to run the ball a little bit more and trust the defense. The problem with Pete at the end in Seattle is the defense was really never up to par. So you look back at that, that was the disconnect there. Russ wanted to cook. Russ wanted to throw the ball a ridiculous amount of times per game. And Pete's like, that's not how it's going to work. You know, that's not how we're going to win. And down the stretch, right, the numbers weren't as great passing-wise because they limited Russ's ability to throw the football, but they turned the ball over significantly fewer times. So that was the ego play that was between those two. But remember, in that locker room, which was not pro-Russ, Pete was his biggest defender. And I'm talking about with the Legion of Boom days. Russell Wilson was not popular. So I think time could heal all wounds. And also, Russ has to be honest with himself at this stage of his career, because he's basically asked to be a game manager with the Steelers this past year, where he knows he's not going to be throwing the ball 40 times per game. I thought Russell Wilson's biggest flaw was he thought that winning a, like, when you go back to the original whole situation with Dan Patrick, remember, it was the Tampa Bay Super Bowl, Tampa Bay going up against the Chiefs. He went on Dan Patrick and he goes, I'm sick and tired of going to Super Bowls and watching in the stands. I want to be one of the greatest ever. That was a lie by Russell Wilson. He wanted to be more of an icon than a great football player. And if you're a great football player, you become an icon. But Russ was so consumed with this individual brand. And then I thought he made some football decisions that were not smart, and where Russ was the underdog and had to earn everything that he got, that's when Russ was at his best. So I think now, years later, when Russ has been publicly humiliated, let's be real, Denver, he was publicly humiliated and did a terrible job, and Pete took that team to the playoffs in their first year without Russell Wilson with Geno Smith. And now Russ has restored his image a little bit, where no one's saying Russell Wilson's a great quarterback with the Pittsburgh Steelers, but they look at him, they go, Russ had a fine season. You know, he's good, he's serviceable, he's not great. So you can go back to Pittsburgh if Pittsburgh wants you, and that's probably the best thing. But if you reconnect with Pete, I don't know how you feel about this, Stu. I do feel as if what happened in the past at this point is already water under the bridge, because Russ took a gamble. Pete showed that he could survive without him, and Russell Wilson basically has not ever looked all that good and has been looked at the way he thought his career was going since leaving Pete Carroll.
Yeah, and I think they both kind of weirdly might need each other. Like, this might be Russell Wilson's best path at being a starting quarterback or competing for a starting job. And then for Carroll and the Raiders, there aren't a lot of options. They don't have the high pick to draft a quarterback. And then you're kind of picking between, you know, Russ, Sam Darnold, maybe Kirk Cousins, a couple other guys that are in there. So I think it makes a lot of sense for both sides.
I think if I had to rank them right now, most likely to least likely, I think Russ is most likely to wind up with the Raiders. I would say that's one. Then between Kirk and Sam Darnold, I'm going to say it's Sam, because they go for like a three-year plan and Pete's on a three-year deal. And then I would say Kirk. But here's the thing. Kirk looked bad this year. I wonder now, a full year removed from the Achilles, because I always say, right, Achilles, ACL, you get back, and then it's the year after that is when I think you go back to being a full percentage of health, because it's also a mental grind. You're thinking about it so much. And clearly, Kirk was rusty to start the year, and he was not all that much better. Like, had a few moments at the beginning of the year where he was okay, right, the Eagles game. But then after that, it got really ugly for him. So I don't know how much good football he has left. And he never looked, not that he was ever mobile, but he never looked like he trust his legs this year, just standing in the pocket. But the way that Kirk could actually happen is, I have a tough time thinking anyone's trading for Kirk Cousins with that contract. So would the Falcons want him as a backup? Yeah, I guess, because you're not paying Michael Penix Jr. anything. But if Kirk doesn't want that, I don't know if Kirk could be a malcontent, but if he wanted to, everyone could be a malcontent. So if he gets released with all that money that he's owed, right, $100 million guaranteed, do you do that kind of Russell Wilson $1.5 million a year kind of thing? You know, where you just take the league minimum. But I would say right now, with those moving pieces, Russ is most likely to land with the Raiders. Then if you had to rank Darnold or Kirk for the Raiders, I would say it's Darnold 2, and then it's Kirk 3. All right, Ryan Hot Take Hickey to join us next in studio. We'll talk about the coaching carousel and also toss some other things around the football world. Update time first, though. Here's Zach. All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network, our weekly Wednesday conversation in studio with Ryan Hot Take Hickey. Hickster, what's happening?
Z-Man, what's going on? How are you?
You're like really concerned about the lower third. It's not even up yet, but you kept on looking over while I'm introducing you.
I'm excited. I wouldn't say concerned. I will give Samter credit. He has some good, witty, creative ones that usually make me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Highest hair in radio. Okay, I'll take it. Conan O'Brien thankfully he's in TV, so I got no competition.
So we actually had Evan Washburn on to start this hour.
Great hair.
Well, see, I think Evan Washburn, no offense, has better hair than you.
Oh, absolutely. I would hope you say that. Yeah.
So the YouTube chat's like, this guy's hair is overrated. Evan Washburn was on Zoom. They
didn't
love
Zoom?
His hair. Yeah. And now, he had a bad hair day.
Was it done up?
I would say about 85%.
Because, like, when he's on CBS, I think it's slicked back.
I saw it in person a few weeks ago. He's at the Eagles game.
In the summertime, he's got, like, a little bleach blonde action going on, which I do like. He's got great. No, don't listen to the chat. Chat's.
Oh, be careful.
Evan's,
you don't
want to
be public enemy number one in the chat.
Great hair.
Remember, the views of Ryan Hot Take Hickey do not reflect the views of Zach Gelb on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity
All
Sports
I'm saying
Network.
Is that when it comes to Evan Washburn's hair, it's great. That's all. Just
so
complimenting him in.
Let me ask you this. In terms of great hair, I said I haven't got to a fourth one yet, so I can't do a Mount Rushmore. But
okay.
In sports media, I would say you're on it.
Oh, God.
I would say Adam Schein is on it, and then Evan Washburn. Those would be three. I got to think of a fourth. You don't like Adam Schein's hair?
No, I'm just trying. Like, part of it is I'm so caught off guard that I can't exactly rifle through right now sports media hairdos and think good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
I just think when you have the list of myself and Adam Schein as two of the three, I mean, we have to, we being the sports media collective, have to be better somehow than that.
I don't know. Watch, I'll pull up a video of Adam Schein.
No,
look
good
at that
hair. No, I'm not. It's good hair. I'm not a big fan personally of a slick back.
Okay.
But it's very solid head of hair. That's all.
Hickey doesn't like Matt Eberflus. That's the takeaway right there.
Well, I will say his coaching, well, I was going to say he went to crap, but it kind of already started there. So it went down even as bad as it was already to start. It went even worse when he got the hairdo. Let's say that.
Yeah. But when that's the big takeaway from Hard Knocks is that Matt Eberflus got a new hairdo. Come
and
on.
A new
give me a
style.
Break.
Yikes.
All righty. I'm going to give you a team. Going to give you the coach that they hired. You give me just one word. In terms of what you think of the hire, then I'll ask you to expand if I find your word interesting.
Okay.
Raiders, Pete Carroll.
Perfect.
Okay, explain why perfect. For an organization that is down and out, is looking up, and you got three great coaches in Reed, who's an all-time great, Jim Harbaugh, who's a great coach, even though you hate his guts, but that's your problem, and Sean Payton, who's going to be in the Hall of Fame too. Why do you say that that's the perfect hire?
Like you just outlined, you have three coaches who know what they're doing. And you look back the last 20 years, the Raiders, for the most part, have been spinning their wheels and stuck in mediocrity because they've always hired a head coach that has no idea what they're doing. Art Schell, Tom Cable, Lane Kiffin, Josh McDaniels. We can go on and on. Stu knows the list. It is a bad, bad list.
Well, Art Schell, the first time, knew what he was doing. The second time, it wasn't a good hire.
Fair. Yeah. And you just look at it, it's like, holy hell. Like, this team is never good because they never have a good head coach that knows what they're doing. Pete Carroll has history of winning. He can bring a plan. He has good culture. He won't be there that long, but I think that's fine. Three or 4 years. This team is, like, I'll say 60 feet under the ground. If Pete Carroll can just get them back to ground level and then you can start building again from there, that's a win. That's what the Raiders need. I think that's what they got.
Do you agree Russell Wilson will be their quarterback?
I'm not sold yet on that. I think, number one, I think Pittsburgh will be motivated to bring him back. And I think if you're Pete, I don't know if he's all in, let's say, excited to bring Russ back.
But I would be fine with it because Pete has already won that debate, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, though, if you can't get a franchise guy, so I don't think Sam Darnold's a franchise guy, number one. Like, if you want to pay Sam Darnold 3 or 4 years, that's an option where you allocate what people could view somewhat franchise money to him, but I wouldn't do that. Could they move up in the draft and get Shedeur Sanders? I'm not going to say it's out of the realm of possibilities, but anything's possible. But you're sitting with the sixth pick. I think Shedeur will be gone there.
Right.
So it's unlikely. So I look at that and I say to myself, would I rather have Russell Wilson on a one-year deal where you have to pay him basically nothing or Sam Darnold on a four-year deal? I would just kick the can down the road if it's just about getting things to be stable. And you know Russ doesn't turn over the ball that much. Or if Kirk becomes available, then Kirk Cousins is of interest. But I think I'd rather have Russell Wilson right now moving forward than Kirk Cousins, where I think Kirk has a higher ceiling. But I just don't know if he's ever going to get back to what he was because of this Achilles injury and how all through the year it still looked like it was a problem for him.
Daniel Jones, like there are a lot of like they need a bridge. Oh, I'm with
Daniel
you.
Jones.
They're not getting a franchise quarterback. You need a bridge. 1 year, 2 year, 3 years. You have a lot of, like, there's going to be a ton of bridge options out there. I won't say like I feel it's a lock. It's going to be Russ.
Dallas Cowboys. What's your word?
Predictable.
Okay, and I'm assuming that's because it's a coach that they could control in Brian.
Exactly
Schottenheim.
Right. Jerry doesn't want competency. He wants someone that says yes, Mr. Jones.
Yeah. Jacksonville.
Concerning. I like.
Now hold on. Your word has to be Duval. Oh,
gives me the. I don't know. It gives me the chills, and it's not Duval. Even the way he said it. It's the face he made, like with the eyes, yeah. Like. Oh. Oh God! It gives me. Yeah, it just gives me the heebie-jeebies.
It gave you the ick, right?
It really did.
I think everyone looked at that hire. They go, the process was sloppy, but Liam Cohen, right, is a fine hire for them. It was the second hottest name on the market in terms of innovative, offensive-minded guys that are just offensive coordinators in this league. I still think the rise is so quick, but that's what happens because I remember when I worked with you on a daily basis, we were like, oh, he's at Kentucky. Yeah. And then he's with the Rams. Oh, he's back at Kentucky.
Back in Kentucky.
And now it's like, oh, he's with the Bucks. So I thought it was a quick rise, but right after that press conference, I think everyone's just like, man, this is the worst hire ever.
You said it, though. The reason why I use concerning is just the process. Like, if you told me, okay, when they fired Doug Peterson, you said the end result is Liam Cohen. I said, okay, you know, that's a pretty good result. But when you look at it where they keep Shad Khan, despite all the negativity surrounding him, then it gets to the point where you interview Liam Cohen. Cohen says, no thanks, I'm not working for Balky. And then Shad Khan, who basically, Balky was Teflon to him, said, you know what, in the span of 10 minutes, you're gone, you're fired. And now, not only Liam Cohen you hired, here are the keys, you pick your own GM.
Mm-hmm.
For a guy that had one, he did great work with the Buccaneers in 2024.
Yeah.
Other than that, like you look at the sustained success, the questions, it's not like it's he has this great resume, let's say like a Ben Johnson does, where it's worth giving him the entire organization, say, we trust you, go take it. That's what is concerning to me.
Desperate times call for desperate measures, and that's what happens when your owner's only won 30% of his games since taking over.
Shot. Poor Trevor Lawrence.
Well, let me actually expand on that opinion. I saw two videos that you put out today. Mr. Let's just ignore the contracts and just pretend that we could just trade them as that they're easy. But you're saying that Dak Prescott and Trevor Lawrence should both demand trades.
Yes.
All right, where are they going?
I think there are a lot of teams interested. Steelers, Seahawks, Vikings. There are a lot of quarterback needy teams out there.
No, the Vikings are going with J.J. McCarthy. Whether you want to recognize that or not, that's what they're doing.
If you're Kevin O'Connell, again, we'll see. You know, like if all of a sudden Trevor Lawrence is out there, are you sure you like J.J. McCarthy that much? Like, I get it. Like, the whole Sam Darnold thing, he burned and crashed
right
in front of your face.
We got Hickey with the hands there. He's just
no,
like...
No, I'm just like, if you're Kevin O'Connell...
There was a 7-second delay before the words came out.
I mean, J.J. McCarthy's a rookie quarterback who missed all last year with an injury, wasn't really practicing a lot, yeah. So he couldn't do a lot. You know, like, it's when the pressure... Not pressure, because he's not going anywhere.
But those two organizations, they just gave new deals to both Trevor and to Dak. The dead cap is going to be ridiculous.
That's not their fault.
Yeah, but it's not feasible to trade him, is my opinion. I understand your point that you think those two franchises are going nowhere. I don't think there's any chance either are getting dealt.
I'm not saying they will get dealt, but I'm saying like from Trevor Lawrence's perspective, Dak's perspective, like you got to look at this process for Trevor, for the hire for Dak, and say, what are we doing here?
So Dak, I would say yes, but Dak had an option to get out and become a free agent this year, and Dak took the deal.
He did.
For Trevor Lawrence, I don't think that they're that far off from turning it around because the only team that's intimidating, and they're not really that intimidating, are the Houston Texans. That division is easy peasy. You got Brian Thomas Jr. Trevor's got to stay healthy. He hasn't been the last 2 years, and you got a good pass rusher in Josh Hines-Allen. Like, I think they could turn that around quickly. But anyway, let's get to the Jets. What's the one word? Aaron Glenn.
Irrelevant.
Why irrelevant?
Just because it's going to come down to Woody Johnson. Woody Johnson, at the press conference, I was asked about his involvement, and I think for me at this point, with how much Woody meddles and gets his hands dirty and screws up the organization, Aaron Glenn has a lot of juice. I'm excited to see what he is as a head coach. But I don't think
they need a quarterback. That's the bottom line.
It's going to matter in part because I would agree, quarterback number one. And if the owner's always in your ear about, let's do this, oh man, this guy's Madden rating, he's pretty good, we should draft him, let's sign him, then like your hands are tied,
Rick
it doesn't
Johnson.
Matter. So it's like until the Jets until Woody Johnson shows he can actually let the people he hires do the job they're hired to do, I don't think it matters who's the head coach because Woody's going to say what he wants, do what he wants, and the head coach is going to be basically at his mercy.
Patriots with Mike Vrabel.
Solid.
But a few years ago, you told me there was never a chance that Mike Vrabel would come and coach the Patriots. 2 years ago, you told
me.
Did
I say that?
Yeah, we got into a big debate over it.
Oh, interesting.
But I would say, a lot has changed since then, so.
I would say solid. What I don't love about it is nothing to do with really Vrabel.
It's the Patriots.
It's here comes the Hickey hatred. It's the fit. The Patriots, I think, needed an offensive-minded coach to get the most out of Drake May. Mike Vrabel in the service, very good coach. He's hiring Josh McDaniels as his OC to develop Drake May.
Who's a good that offensive coordinator, horrible head coach.
Very concerning.
He's a good offensive coordinator, horrible head coach.
How he developed Mac Jones, and I put developed in air quotes, quote unquote.
Whoa, wait, no. He was there for a year with Mac Jones.
Right, and what did they do in that 1 year?
They made the playoffs.
Right, but how did they make the playoffs? They told Mac Jones, don't do anything. Don't screw up.
Yeah, they put him in a game manager role because Mac Jones is not that good.
This team is not good enough for that.
Mac Jones.
Josh
McDaniels. He was a Pro Bowl quarterback under Josh McDaniels.
So was, Tyler Huntley. Yeah. The Pro Bowl nod is just gone. Gone.
You hate McDaniels, I get it, because you're a Colts fan.
I'm thankful that he's not the head coach looking back.
Yeah.
But Josh McDaniels is not exactly get me, if I was a Patriots fan, excited that he's going to get the most out of Drake May, and I think this team is going to succeed or fail based on the development of their quarterback.
Yeah, it's
going
to come down to if they get an offensive line and number one wide receiver around him. Bears, what's the word?
Slobberfest. This is the greatest hire ever. I'm hot take cookie.
A+. Best hire.
It's so predictable.
But A+, I won't be Charles Barkley. I won't say two words. You said one word, A+.
I said that?
No. There's a famous clip of Charles Barkley when they say, Chuck, say two words about the upcoming.
He says
10 words. He goes, what are you guys talking about? You said two words. Steve Nash and Chris Paul. Yeah, it's four words, idiot. A+.
Gotcha. All righty. This is fun. You got Knowles as your defensive coordinator.
Oh.
It's fine. No more excuses for James Franklin. If James Franklin doesn't win a national championship this year, I'd fire his ass.
I am so excited.
You're already taking the bait.
What are you taking the bait? You're saying me, every other publication hasn't put out.
You didn't win one big game this year.
You have to win. I don't disagree. Mm-hmm. But for the first time in a long time, they are set to actually win big games.
Yeah. Stop.
Best defense coordinator. They put the money where their mouth is. They got everyone returning. Let's go. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No excuses.
I can't wait for you to be disappointed.
National title November. Or bust.
Yeah, and it won't happen. All right, he's Ryan Hot Ticket. Sean Merriman, a real man, will join us next.